You're listening to the Artist First World Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kaye in the studio. Thanks, audience, for joining us worldwide. All broadcasts available free on demand 24/7 at artistfirst.com. Be sure to consult our homepage regularly for updated guests. This hour, it's my privilege to introduce author Barbara Casey. She's a prolific writer, a wonderful human being, and a dog rescuer, which I absolutely love. BarbaraCaseyAgency.com, the website. Special thanks to Ron Chepsik of Strategic Media Books for bringing our guest this way. How do you do, Barbara?
I do fine. How are you, Tony?
What fun you're having, and I recall that you were with us some years ago.
Yes, it hasn't been that long ago. We discussed my book about Catherine Kelly.
Yes, Catherine Kelly.
Right.
Wow.
And that went on. That's been optioned for a movie now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How exciting when others can appreciate the quality of the research that you do. And I know that Ron Chepsik of Crime Beat, our crime radio broadcast, he loves research, you know.
Yes.
That's his forte. And he's traveling now, I believe, in Colombia.
That's right.
We do have a worldwide audience with listeners from every nation on earth, Barbara. Special thanks to our military personnel that are joining us all over Europe. We see connections on every continent. Thank you for joining us, audience. The website, BarbaraCaseyAgency.com, will enlighten you about our guest in ways I won't have time to discuss. She's the author of so many books and articles. She's been giving back to the community for decades. Thank you, Barbara, for your generosity in the way that you present material. And, you know, this latest release of yours really falls into the same crime research background, doesn't it?
It does. You know, the Catherine Kelly book was the first nonfiction true crime book that I had ever tried writing. And I enjoyed the research so much, talking about the research. I really did enjoy digging into her background because there was so little known about her, and that I wanted to try it again. And when I started looking into Asada Shakur, whose name was Joanne Deborah Bryan, really, that was her birth name, but she changed her name to Asada Shakur. She was another strong female protagonist, and there was a lot written about her that she had written or her supporters had written, but I had to do a lot of digging to get the objective viewpoint, and it was just a fascinating study of another strong woman.
You know, it is amazing to me how much material needs to be unearthed that isn't a part of what a person has written or has been written about them.
That's right.
You could be discussing the high school, other people in their lives that had an influence that pushed them into a direction, you know, a turning point.
That's right. And for me, she's involved in so many criminal activities, and I was fascinated by what was it that caused her to take that road in life. And as I dug into her childhood, which there's just very little about it, but what I was able to find out was she came from such a good family, and she was brought up by her mother and her maternal grandparents, and she was like any other little girl. Her grandparents owned a lot of beachfront property in a place called Seabreeze, which is just near Wilmington, North Carolina. And they started, they built a restaurant there. It was a resort for black people, because back in those days, we were still looking at segregation and Jim Crow and all of that. And she would go on during the summers, and read. She loved to read, but even then, even as a small child, she had a streak that of independence, and she just couldn't follow the rules, and you could see it even back then.
Well, you could see why this one also has Hollywood written on it.
I sure hope so.
You know, you have a way of words that really captivates quickly the reader and draws them into the story, where you can almost see the behavior of the person being acted out right in front of you.
Right. I think that comes from my background in writing novels. Even though I'm writing this is nonfiction, I still see them as characters and build on that character, only using facts, actual facts. But when she was visiting with her grandparents, she would entertain the people that would come into the restaurant just for maybe a quarter. You know, she would dance and sing, and in fact, that it was at this beach where the shag developed, and that's a dance that anybody who's ever been to Myrtle Beach knows what the shag is. And
well, no, Barbara, we need you to tell us. Please describe the shag. We need to hear you tell us in your own words. You know, those cultural euphemisms, right? That
yes.
People who know the area have been there,
right.
Have been out having seafood and drinking shots of tequila would know and recognize. And she was a part of that culture as well.
She was a part of that culture, but with this streak, and she started running away. She started running away, and her mother divorced shortly after she was Asada was born, and her mother took her back to New York where she to go to school, but she just couldn't settle down. She just couldn't follow the rules, and she was living out on the streets as a 10-year-old.
A 10-year-old on the streets.
Now,
is that the essence of your subtitle, A 20th Century Escaped Slave?
No, that's going to refer to something else in the story.
Okay, then we'll wait.
Wait. Yeah, and you'll understand why. But fortunately, she had an aunt. It was her mother's sister, Evelyn, who tried to guide her, introduce her to the nicer things in life, the cultural museums and things like that in New York. And for a time, she even had Asada living with her, trying to encourage her to finish her school. But again, Asada ran away before she graduated from high school. But it was her aunt who insisted that she at least get the GED. It just continued that pattern where she would be running away and trying to broaden her horizons on her own without, you know, just with no guidance or rules. And she eventually wound up going to some schools in New York and graduated, and then wound up going out to California to Berkeley. And, of course, in the early 60s at Berkeley, there was just so much unrest, and she was just absorbing it all. She was so interested in all the revolutionaries, and that was her bent.
Well, sure, that was the decade of Malcolm X,
yes,
for instance.
Exactly, right.
And there was social change, feminism coming on board, the sexual revolution was happening. There were the riots, the marches with Martin Luther King Jr. So she was a product of those decades of struggle and some victory, although many today are still struggling for the victory
that needs to come, you know.
That's right.
But nonetheless, she was caught up by that and had friends and was brought into that sort of rebellious question authority, which was her past behavior anyway.
That's right. It just suited her. All the political activities and protests, the sit-ins, it appealed to her. But there was also this pride in her own roots and her background, and she gave up her hairstyle that had been styled as a white woman and cut it off and let it go natural, and she started dressing in the African dress, proud of her heritage and wanting to let that express who she was. So she was rebellious in every aspect of her life at that point. And that was when she became involved with so many of the revolutionary groups, but in particular the Black Panthers. They were just getting started, and she joined them.
Wow. You know, I think many forgot that women would join the Black Panthers. We think of them as a motorcycle gang.
Right. Well, she, of course, their motto was freedom by any means necessary, because when she first joined, they had a platform where they were trying to feed children, needy children. They were trying to do good for their people. But with the killing and the assassination of Martin Luther King, they became more militant, and they split into two factions, and she followed the more militant side of it, where it was just they were determined to stop what they considered were the problems in society aimed against the black people. And there were just so many killings and robberies, and she seemed to be involved in a great many of them. And she really made a name of herself, because the police and the FBI took notice of her, and they were thinking that she was even the leader of the Black Panther Party for a while. When they arrested the original leader, they thought she had taken over that role. And then that was also when J. Edgar Hoover was in office, and he formed a group called the COINTELPRO, and their whole mission was to try to expose and disrupt and just neutralize these black organizations and do away with their members and leaders, because they were afraid that they were just going to become so militant that it was going to be a scourge on society. But she was involved in all of that. Then at some point, she decided that it wasn't exactly what she wanted to express. And so from that, she joined an even more militant group, which was the Black Liberation Movement. And this was a splinter off of the original Black Panthers.
And now we're moving into early 70s, 71, 73.
The late 60s and the early 70s.
She's become more militant in her behavior, her associations, and of course, trouble begets trouble. You know,
that's right. Her main job when she joined the Black Liberation Movement was to work what they called the railroad stations, and that was the Black Liberation Army underground support network. Where they would assist people and help them to get where they needed to go. And, of course, they were all running from various criminal activities, but that was what her job was. And she made such a name for herself that the FBI had a special investigation group looking just for her. They called it CHESROB because she had married when she was in college. And, of course, she was divorced by then, but her married name was Chesimard. So she was really making a name for herself. And, you keep going back. I keep going back to that little girl. And how she would sit on the back of her grandpa's pickup truck and read the Bobbsey Twins, which was a series of mystery books for children, and playing the pick up shells and dance for the customers in her grandparents' restaurant. And then here's this militant woman who is killing and robbing, and it's so hard to understand. But she justified it. I mean, she was doing what she felt was needed to be done to help her black people.
Well, this is so common. Here in our backyard, we have Jeffrey Dahmer, his family.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same. I mean, he murdered and ate cannibalized
right.
human beings in a refrigerator and so forth. And the parents, the poor parents, and the home that he came from, the love, the involvement. I mean, they were good people.
Right.
And you say, how can this happen?
Right.
That this turn of events, this twist in behavior, this peculiar idiosyncrasy of an individual leads to a pattern of behavior so foreign from the opportunity that they were afforded growing up.
Well, it's hard to understand because her mother was an elementary school teacher, and her father was a government employee. So, I mean, they had, it wasn't that they were destitute. They had a life, and even though her parents divorced, she was brought up knowing right from wrong, and her grandmother in particular was always trying to teach her how to behave and how to be a good person. But yet she had this built inside of her that she needed to go this road and express herself in this way. So
yeah, now during your research into the records, the police records, the information available from newspaper reporters. Were you able to locate any firsthand, so to speak, acquaintances or people that were involved, or did your research not take you in that direction?
Well, actually, it did, because the biggest crime for which she is associated with was the murder of the New Jersey state trooper on the New Jersey Turnpike, Werner Forster. And of all the things that she was indicted for, of all the different crimes that she was indicted for, that is the only one that she was actually convicted. And she was sent to prison. And then 6 years later, she escaped. And so she eventually fled 3 years later. She stayed underground. They couldn't find her, and then she eventually wound up in Cuba. And so she she's still there. And so now, they're still looking for Asada, and they're asking for her to be returned to the United States. And the governor of New Jersey, the state troopers, they're all still very much involved in this case, because she escaped, and they cannot close the case until they get her back, because she killed one of their own. So, I mean, it's very ongoing, and they're very outspoken about it. They all know who Asada Shakur is, and they're determined to get her back. And of course, the governor, Chris Christie, he's been writing letters. They're doing everything they can, but
she's actually on the FBI most wanted list or something,
is,
right?
That's right.
I mean,
and
she's
the most wanted terrorist, which she was the first woman to ever be placed on that list.
That's amazing. It really is. What
I mean,
a compelling
she's right up
story.
There with all the hardened, horrible people, and but they consider it that serious that they get her back. And it's another interesting note. Her aunt, Evelyn Williams, who had tried to guide her and put her in the right direction and introduce her to all the beautiful cultural things in life, she had studied law and eventually got her degree in law, and she gave up her job and in order to defend Asada Shakur full-time because of all of these different trials. There were, I think she was indicted 10 times between 73 and 77 in New York and New Jersey. And her aunt, Evelyn, was her attorney. And then when this big trial came about with the New Jersey state trooper being murdered, and one other person as well. Again, Evelyn Williams was her attorney, but then she brought in a whole bunch of lawyers for this case, including William Kunstler, and I'm sure you're familiar with him. He was a famous attorney from out west. But she had her group of attorneys, and that was the only trial where the conviction held, and she was found guilty. On all eight, that she was charged with eight counts, and she was convicted on all eight counts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, the book will be released in February of 2016. Is there a mechanism for early ordering?
Yes, there is. It's available for pre-order through Amazon. And it'll be released February 15th. So
congratulations, Barbara.
Well, thank you.
What fun! Now, from beginning to end, this every study biography has a life. This is a true crime biography. You had to mine a lot of material, bring it together succinctly to tell this incredible story. That really is still ongoing.
That's right. That's right. That's what makes it so fascinating because it's so current. It's still going on.
So there'll be a final chapter, a second book, something at some point.
Well, certainly there's going to be an addendum. But at some point, they have to get this resolved. Castro is refusing to return her. She's a political prisoner. And they're giving her sanctuary. In fact, they have. When she arrived there, they gave her free housing. They gave her a stipend. They gave her an allowance. They took care of her education. She went on to get some degrees, but in return, they expected her to be like an ambassador to visiting dignitaries that went to Cuba. And she would talk about all the evils of the United States, and but she was basically given a free life in Cuba. She conducted interviews up until a few years ago, and then they suddenly stopped. And I think it's probably because there was a big $3 million bounty. A $2 million bounty put on her head between the FBI and the state of New Jersey. And once that happened, I think she became afraid that someone would either kill her or that, you know, they would turn her in. And for a long time, the Cuban people didn't know about it. But then when President Obama opened up the relations with the Cuban government, and they began to start reading newspapers again. They found out that they're harboring a criminal, Assata Shakur, and there's a $2 million reward for anyone who can turn her in. So she has sort of disappeared, and no one really can get to her now.
Barbara Casey, agency, the website, audience, follow the link provided at artistfirst.com. Special thanks to Ron Chepsick, Strategic Media Books, for all of the involvement with Casey and publishing the book. It'll be available February 15th, 2017. You can pre-order your copy. Visit strategicmediabooks.com. Or if you're at the Artist First homepage, select Crime Beat. And while you're over there, you'll see all the information about Ron Chepsick and the fabulous authors that he has available at Strategic Media Books. Crime enthusiasts, it is by far the number one crime show on the internet today. Thank you, Barbara Casey Agency, for being involved with Ron Chepsick, and Strategic Media Books, our partners here at Artist First Radio. What a great team you have behind you. And audience, when you visit the website, you'll see right away that, yes, that's right, she's a Yankee from Carrollton, Illinois, who probably hasn't quite been adopted by our Southern brothers and sisters down there in North Carolina, although you've picked up the twang, I'll give you that. And
I went to college in North Carolina, so I'm a Southern girl.
Absolutely, and you're such a beautiful belle. Thank you for supporting the arts and contributing so broadly to authors, to writing, for magazines. You're an advocate on so many levels. Thank you for putting yourself out there, Barbara,
in such a positive,
loving way. And, you know, anytime I find an author, my sister in Christ, who also loves to rescue animals, I'm very happy. Thank you for that, for your beautiful pets and giving them image to on your website. Very kind. I think you'll need to contact Briarlee Mitchell. Also, if you have a chance, she's a huge animal advocate and trains rescue dogs for search and rescue, those who have been lost or in danger or who have died. And she is a fabulous contributor to the arts here on Artist First Radio. So, Barbara, please meet Dr. Briarlee Mitchell.
Oh.
She's a professor. She'll be retiring soon by her own choice, design, and more involved with the radio shows. But I think you would just really enjoy Briarlee Mitchell in her work and what she's doing. And in the way of poetry, are you still dabbling at that? It seems you've really hit a nerve with crime biography, and you're having a great time with that. But are there other novels that you're considering?
Well, yes, I'm working on a series for young adults. It's a mystery series, and I have completed the first three, and I have one more that will complete that series. So I'm working on that.
What age group will that target? 12 to 18, or
that's right, or even older. I find that a lot of adults enjoy my young adult novels. And it's because of the subject matter. I bring in so many unusual things. So, I write probably more for adults than I do children. But the themes are more for young adults. And as far as poetry, I occasionally will write a poem and include it in one of my novels. It has a purpose. So that's how I stay in touch with my poetic leanings.
Isn't that wonderful? And you're right. You never know when something will come to mind
right.
in the way of poetry. And you have that interest, that background, that training, that discipline, you know, that's another part of you as a writer. When you're writing for a magazine, that's one thing, right?
I mean,
that's right. A short version of the big picture. Novels, of course, fiction, nonfiction, and then the autobiographical, the stories, real human, true life biographies, right? You really, and in those cases, you can't really fabricate, you know, like you would in a fiction.
You use the real facts.
You have
to be very, very careful about that.
And so you have so many disciplines, and you've written so broadly, and you write so much to the heart. You give a good vision when you read, and yet you're able to dabble and remind yourself, hey, I am a poet, you know. So maybe we'll see a collection in a year or so.
I don't know about that, but it's something that as a writer, you know when you have to do it. It's there, you need to express it, and that's just the way it is.
Asada Shakur, the topic this hour, is this an appropriate time to bring up a 20th century escaped slave?
When she escaped from prison, and then wound up in Cuba, she referred to herself as a 20th century escaped slave because
slave to Americanism.
Yeah, she felt that she had been treated as a slave all of her life in this country, in the United States, and she had escaped the bondage of that, even though she had been given a wonderful life as a child. It was there for her, but she, as I say, she chose a different road.
Well, isn't there a bondage then in the land of freedom? Well, sure.
Yeah.
People suffer all kinds of enslavement in the land of the free and the brave. And I don't believe that it's politically motivated. It can happen in any politically right, left, in between environment.
That's right.
And I think the lines get blurred often for people. They become in sync with what their own feelings are, the forest and the trees, you know?
Yes.
And they don't see the forest, that this is happening everywhere, on all continents, at all time, among all peoples, among all political persuasions.
Right. And in her case, she the groups that she associated with only inflamed what she was feeling within herself, what she saw within herself. And you know, all the things that were going on in the 60s, I mean, she was just ripe for all of that, to just absorb it and then run with it. And that's what she did.
She called herself a 20th century escaped slave.
Yes.
And so that becomes the subtitle to her name, which really isn't her given name,
right,
and becomes symbolic of all that she has expressed in the violence and the way that she went about expressing that violence, with that wing of the Black Panthers, with that involvement with people who would strike back against authority figures.
That's exactly right. And she continues, at least up until maybe this past year, still to make her voice heard from Cuba, either through articles or radio broadcasts, or still advocating all of the things that are wrong with the government here in the United States and how the blacks have been mistreated. And
she was free to run for office.
Well,
she could have been a political candidate, you know.
I know, and tried to change make change that way. But she has such a huge following, even after all of this time. She has such a huge following. People think that, you know, the Black Lives Matter, that's an organization that before each one of their events or one of their meetings, they will say something that Asada has said as an introduction to the event or the meeting. And she just has a huge following. Many are advocating that she be pardoned and or just left alone. I personally think if she might not even be in Cuba now. I think that when it became known about the bounty over in Cuba, that I think maybe she has already left and probably gone to another country where she'll live in exile without anyone knowing.
Well, let's hope it's really hot and they have lots of flies. we make our own hell, don't we?
Yes.
And rebellion can lead to circumstances not so pleasant. Living in a cave, you know.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And unfortunately, many live in that here in the great country of the United States of America. They are slaves to many things, and that is another challenge for our culture, that freedom itself can become an opportunity to be a victim.
Yes.
And she fell into that trap, and her world view, certainly her view of our culture, is that to be disdained. And how do you change that? You know, that's the radicalism that we are fighting now on all points of the globe.
That's right.
This radical view that we must all bend the knee or have our heads removed if we fail to comply.
Uh-huh.
And certainly we don't want that anarchy in the United States of America.
No, that's not what our freedom is about. And you have to sympathize with the people that she left in her wake, like her mother. Her mother, I'm sure, did everything she could trying to teach her daughter what was right and from wrong, and trying to guide her into a decent life without that didn't involve criminal activity. And yet, to the day that she died, she was getting harassing phone calls and threats and all. And she had done nothing but try to bring up that girl as best she could. But yet she had to suffer for Asada's crimes. And Evelyn, her aunt, who just gave up her whole world in order trying to help her niece through all these trials, she never did really accomplish much after that. People just didn't want her to be associated with her, and it ruined her life. So there were so many people that were hurt that because of Asada's actions. No man is alone. What you do there, for every action, there's a reaction.
That's right. Here we are, Cleveland, Ohio, Barbara Casey. Cleveland, Ohio, not many weeks ago, an individual in an automobile drove through a construction zone, struck a police officer and killed him. The front of the vehicle was so badly damaged that steam was coming from the front of the car.
The
video coverage captured the horrific act. The driver left the scene rapidly and was later discovered. And it's believed, who knows, well, why did they leave? Well, there's a criminal record involved and so forth. All kinds of things will come out. But the end result is a young, beautiful man who was giving in service to others was struck dead.
Right.
And that needs to be rectified. I mean, there's no no amount that we could do to rectify, but justice must prevail. We must. Now, if that person who hit the officer in Cleveland, Ohio, would have gotten out of their vehicle and stumbled around half drunk and wept on the ground in tears that they what they had done, the jury is going to look at that. You know?
Right.
And yet this person thought they could just leave, like no one would ever discover them, and leave in their wake such tragedy. And she has certainly done all of that. She has left in her wake a tragedy, and that's why she's
that's
on
right.
the FBI most wanted. Yeah. Come on, list. Because
yeah.
what she has done in her wake and continues to do with her propaganda is destructive.
Well, it is, and it's going to be interesting to see how it does play out, because I know that the New Jersey state troopers are not going to give up. They're going to, and the governor of New Jersey isn't going to give up. And all the people that are behind them are not going to give up. They're going to keep insisting that Cuba release her, if they even have her now. So at some point, there's going to be a resolution here, and it will be interesting to see. They want to put her back in prison and let her serve out her. She's 69 years old now. She had a baby while she was in prison. So she's not a young woman, but if they do, if Cuba does release her back to the United States, she'll spend the rest of her life in prison.
If you'd like a quick glimpse at the quality of our author's writing when it comes to true crime biography, we highly recommend Catherine Kelly, the mole behind Machine Gun Kelly. And that really was your first full look at a biography centering around an individual and collecting and really understanding the psyche, you know.
Yes.
And that's what you've done here. You probe deeply into the psyche. Why do they think the way they do? How could they engage in this kind of activity seemingly without conscience?
Right, exactly. That is it. There doesn't seem to be a conscience there. And with Catherine Kelly, there was something very similar. She just enjoyed it. She wanted the best things in life, and she just enjoyed going out and getting it, no matter what it took. With Asada, it isn't that she enjoys the best things in life. She doesn't think
revels in the attention.
She doesn't think that life is fair, and she wants to change it. It isn't being fair to the black people, and she wants to correct that. But Catherine, she just had a ball. She just went out and robbed and did whatever she could to get all the jewels and minks, she just loved it. As we talked about, she was the person behind Machine Gun Kelly. She's the one that created that whole persona of him. He was a weak man, but boy, she kept him moving.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and that they get what they want.
Right.
You know, so was ending up in Cuba by accident? No. Come on.
No.
And did Cuba attempt political gain and empowerment from it? Yes. Right? So there's a thought process taking place on Cuba that says, here's someone who is pointing out that America, 90 miles, get in your boat, start heading there, ain't worth going.
Uh-huh.
Because it's no better there than it is here.
Right. No, Cuba's
See?
Better. She was saying Cuba is better.
Yes.
That was her whole message.
And so, you know, at the height in the early 70s, those they're still driving cars from the 50s.
Right.
And people are getting on boats by the thousands. and ending up where? In Miami. In when? The 70s. And they're using her as propaganda.
That's right.
And today, those in Cuba who came here during that period of time, they're not very happy with this relationship between the United States and Cuba. Because they remember the old Cuba and how they managed to escape and come back and come here. And they have an appreciation for this country. They're not getting on boats and heading back 90 miles.
It was interesting because I was able to get hold of a Cuban newspaper and get it translated. And this was when the news came out about the bounty. And there were comments from many of the Cuban people. And they have no love for Asada at all. And they just would as soon see her come back to this country and serve out her time in prison. And, of course, they would love to get the money, the reward. But she hasn't really made any friends there except for other exiles who are there that have also escaped the reach of our law here. They are living in exile in Cuba as well. But the people of Cuba, they don't sympathize with her. So and in a way they resent her because she has been living free off of the Cuban government when many of the people of Cuba don't have anything. And so why should she live free off the Cuban government? So there's a lot of that's why I just wonder if she hasn't already left Cuba and maybe gone to another country.
Well, she would if she needed the health care.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
That's always they have great health care in Cuba. Sure they do. Okay, line's moving now. They have great health care in Canada, too. They still come to America where they have the best health care on planet Earth. And the best people on planet Earth. A wonderfully generous, benevolent, kind country, the United States of America. God bless America. God bless authors like our guest, Barbara Casey. BarbaraCaseyAgency.com, the website. Audience, you won't be disappointed with our guest. She is a fabulous human being, a great writer. Thanks to Ron Chepsik for partnering with Barbara Casey Agency at Strategic Media Books. And I love the book cover. Is there a story behind the red, the bars, the outfit, the hat?
It was a photograph that I had found, and then I started playing around with it and added the bars because she is a prisoner. Whether she admits it or not, she's a prisoner in her own mind, in her life. Her whole life has been a prison. So that was the idea behind the cover.
Beautiful. Barbara Casey, thank you again for joining us.
Thank you, Tony.
Before I let you go, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to or closing remarks for our listeners?
Just I appreciate the time with you. I always enjoy visiting with you. And thank you. Thank the audience for listening and just hello to all of you, and I hope to have some new fans from this.
Well, we'll see you next time then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you, Tony. Uh-huh.